So thank you very much for introducing your current state of mind and emotions and for being here. And I guess we're going to begin with some meditation, which is what we usually do, just to settle in together and to share some of the goodness of our lives with one another. And hopefully you can tune in to some of the post-retreat stillness that I hope is still present in all three of us and in this room. It was incredible to come back to such a silent place. And this is after being in a, you know, renowned, a place that's renowned for its silence, but coming back here was even quieter. So, and the autumn leaves were absolutely still yesterday and the day before. So for me, I just still feel like being quiet. So let's just relax ourselves, gently close our eyes if you're comfortable to do so. And just greet yourself right where you are and as you are. Listening in to your body and mind. So with the eyes closed, just gently allowing yourself to become present. Slowly coming closer to the middle of time. Allowing the impressions, people's faces on the screen to slowly fade. Recognizing that whatever you've done today has finished, what's done is finished. And this moment is brand new. And see how gentle you can be with the present moment. Allowing your awareness to be soft. Most translucent. Like a very gentle autumn mist. So the present moment hardly knows you're there. Being gentle with your body, the feelings in the body. Just getting a sense of the body as a whole. Making any adjustments that would bring about more ease and comfort. And then slowly allowing this gentle present moment awareness to start flowing down from the top of your head. All the way to the tips of your toes. Gently, in your own time. Noticing each and every part of the scalp. Without words, but just connecting to the feelings. Relaxing into the feelings in your face. Just inviting any parts of your face, maybe your brow or jaw, what it would mean to be that little more relaxed. Sensing your neck, throat, your shoulders. Being gentle, receptive to whatever manifests there. Through your arms, your elbows, all the way down to your hands, fingers and fingertips. Taking the time to really care. Allow yourself to receive any pleasant sensations and linger there longer if it relaxes your mind. See how relaxed, how easeful your fingers can be. And spreading again from the neck down through the chest. All the organs inside, just picking up any sensations you notice. Being so gentle, respectful to whatever you experience right now. Allowing these sensations to settle the mind more and more fully into this present moment. Away from the concept of time. Flowing down to your belly. Your abdomen, sides of your body, the ribs, waist, and all the way down your back, the back of the shoulders, down the spine, shoulder blades, back of your waist, right down to the back of your buttocks, your hips. If there's any sickness, any gastric disturbance, any heart problems, just spend a little longer in those areas, inviting those organs to really relax, even sending gratitude to them. As they continue to try to serve you the best they possibly can. Trusting your body. And sensing into your buttocks. Noticing the weight of the body, the pressure of the ground. Really taking your seat in this present moment with whatever feelings you notice in your buttocks right now. Moving down through your hips to the thighs. Inviting all those big thigh muscles to expand, to relax, to soften. With this gentle awareness. Flowing down into your knees, all the different parts of your knees, maybe a sense of ease or maybe aches, maybe pricking sensations, just extending that gentleness, no matter what you're feeling in your knees. Filling up your lower legs with this gentle awareness. Calves, the shins, right down to your ankles, heels, the soles, the toes, your own time. See if you can notice each and every toe. Without effort or force, just receiving the sensations in your toes. And being kind to them, sending them kindness and care. And just allowing your mind to relax in the same way you relaxed your body. See if you can notice any quality of mind. Any peace, ease, maybe tiredness, clarity. Maybe restlessness or thinking. And just extend that same gentle care. Inviting your mind to settle. And open. Noticing the space between the thoughts. And taking refuge there. And as the mind quietens and relaxes, you might find you notice the breath. Without any force or any control, just allowing the breath to be natural and provide a resting place for the mind. Keeping the mind soft and gentle. Welcoming the breath inside. See if you can stay present for one single in-breath, fully present to every part of that breath. And fully present for every part of the outgoing breath. One breath at a time. And starting again whenever you notice your mind has wandered away. Just welcoming the next breath. Being fully present for that. Until all that's left is just a tiny part of the breath happening now. We're coming to the end of this short meditation. We can continue to rest in the center of time. So just enjoying one more breath, the only breath you ever have. It's the one happening now. And slowly coming back into contact with the sense of your body sitting, feelings contained within this body, from the toes, through the legs, to the buttocks, the torso, the hands and the arms, to your face, your head. Noticing how you feel now. Your body more relaxed than when you began? Noticing the quality of your mind. Is there a little bit more spaciousness, peace, maybe silence, or maybe there are still a lot of thoughts, just noticing. Can you notice more gentleness in the mind? And so in the meditation, let's share whatever peace, however subtle it may seem, whatever harmony we have in our minds, in our lives. Let's share that for the benefit of all beings, everyone in this room and beyond. May all beings be happy. Be safe. Be peaceful. May all beings be free from danger, free from harm. May I be happy, peaceful, and safe. May my practice be for the benefit of myself and all other beings. I hope you're feeling a little bit more chill without being cold, a bit more relaxed. I haven't led a guided meditation for at least 3 months, so and my mind was actually, it was partly tiredness, but also very much slowed down since the retreat. So it was a little bit hard to get the words out, but I hope you could hear it, and I hope it, it worked somehow for you. So, today's reflection and invitation in the Q&A is on the theme of the benefit of a long retreat. And for anyone who has done a long retreat, you'll know that it's very hard to measure the benefits. It may take months or even years to really understand how the mind is gradually changing, how wisdom is gradually growing, how peace is slowly settling in deeper and deeper into the mind. So, but I am hoping to inspire people who may feel drawn towards the prospect of silence and solitude and being in the longer retreat this evening. So if you haven't already experienced a retreat of maybe more than a few days, then I definitely encourage you to start thinking about it and maybe getting inspired. So, of course, most of you will know that I've just come out of a 3-month retreat and you probably want to know all about it. Unfortunately, as a bhikkhuni, I can't tell you exactly what I experienced, and we try not to exaggerate or even kind of say too much. And I think there's a good reason for that, because as I was saying already, the benefits are not necessarily how we feel about the retreat. They're not necessarily about whether the experience is pleasant or unpleasant, easeful or difficult. sometimes the benefits come through struggle, through even meeting emotions like despair. And so we can't say it's good or bad. We can't say sadness is wrong or right. These are natural human emotions. And I think one of the first benefits of being with ourselves, you know, in a more undistracted way, in a way that allows for fewer distractions, is that we actually have to meet many, many different states of mind and learn how to make peace with them, how to be with them, how to hold them in ways that allows us to learn, allows us to become familiar and, in a sense, understand the human condition, not only our own states of mind, but recognize how these are universal and how these connect us to one another in ways that can then serve, you know, because we realize that we're not actually so different from anybody else. And that's one of the obvious benefits to me anyway of retreat, that although it's a paradox, you know, and although we take time to be in solitude and in a sense to be alone, it's only possible to do that within community, within a very wide and vast support system that for me is not only spread across Australia, the place that I'm practicing, but also across the community here, the international community that have enabled me to have such an opportunity. So I guess I want to thank you all very much for being part of what enables this to take place. And although I've been in solitude for, I had at least a month of complete solitude in the middle of the retreat, it is very much for everyone else. And I think if the retreat makes us too insular, and if we actually find we're becoming a little bit obsessed with our own progress, for example, and our hearts are not becoming more open to others, then something's gone wrong. You know, we're not really meeting our inner experience fully. We're actually becoming a little disconnected. And I've met people like this, you know, who go on retreat and then feel that everyone else is disturbing them by being there, let alone trying to talk to them or engage with them. But just, you know, by being there, it's like, no, I'm alone. I don't want to even think about anybody else. And this is not really the right approach. So please forgive me if this talk is all over the place. I haven't actually prepared it at all, other than write a few key words down on a little scribbly piece of paper that I can't even read. So, but I did want to cover a few different themes, and beginning perhaps logically with some of the preparation for retreat and then some of the benefits that I experienced in the retreat itself, some of the results of retreat, and maybe some of the applications as well of retreat in daily life. So it's important to prepare, and you know, practicing one factor of the path or two factors of the path, you know, such as right mindfulness and right stillness outside the context of the path never works. So the first thing is to actually try to apply what we've learned so far in our daily lives. And yet at the same time, try to carve out a space that allows us to take some time away. And this involves some preparation. It involves some planning, just like we plan for our holidays. You know, it involves taking time off work. It involves maybe putting down some of our commitments and responsibilities. Perhaps it might involve ensuring that an elderly parent is well cared for, or childcare, you know, even for a weekend, especially if you're a mother or a parent at all, you know, and you're not, you don't have a very supportive partner, you might have to try to prepare for that. So it involves some definite intention and commitment, and also a degree of renunciation. And I was remembering earlier today that at one time in my life, I was very busy with doing my degree. It was a degree in Indian medicine that was actually only 3 years in England. It was like 9-month semesters. But in India, it's 5.5 years of 11 months a year, and it was the same content. So it was very, very intensive. I don't know why my life always seems to swing from completely intensive to, well, completely intensive in a different way on retreat. It seems to be like all or nothing. My mother always told me that. But it's just the way my life seems to go. So this study period was very intense. And yet I wanted to go for a 10-day Vipassana retreat during that semester 1 year. And it definitely involved a sense of risk and a sense of being able to trust that the time I took out would be of benefit and wouldn't be to the detriment of my studies. So that involved maybe what you might call a bit of blind faith in a way, but I also had enough experience by now in retreats to know that the results were always good. And so I was able to make that sacrifice and trust that I'd catch up with my colleagues. You know, I had a very good friend who made notes on my behalf, so I could kind of catch up. But the point was that the clarity of mind, you know, that that retreat gave me actually more than made up for any perceived, you know, missing out. And I think whatever we do in life, you know, involves a sacrifice in another area of life. And so it does involve a bit of faith, a bit of confidence. You know, even for Ajahn Brahm, who managed to take a whole month of personal retreat this year, and it was his first retreat over 2 weeks long since 2002. So for those who think that monastics meditate every day, all day, for years and years and years, you know, monastics take responsibilities very seriously too. And it took the invitation of the whole Sangha, including myself, to convince Ajahn Brahm that he could take that month. And by the power of doing that, it also encouraged many of us in that 3 month retreat to do the same, to have even more solitude for that month. And I was one of them. So I was very fortunate to have a supportive community there, an extended community of friends who were not only on the retreat, but also in Perth, and who could provide suitable food and make sure my health remained stable, which I'm happy to say that it did. So, I had, I think, 6 weeks before that solitary part of the retreat to gradually become more and more silent and to disengage from my responsibilities. It probably happened after about 10 days. So I landed with my 200 Garikas, and bit by bit, we got over our jet lag and finished off, you know, last emails to family and friends, letting them know we'd arrived, and gradually we disappeared. Luckily at Jhana Grove they have these lovely signs that you can put around your neck or stick onto your chest that say noble silence. I'm in noble silence with a shush or with a Buddha Rupa or something like this. So I wore it at all times of day. But I had a challenge, because the day that I was supposed to go offline, I thought, I'll just send one last email to thank my friends for providing, you know, food that I could eat. And then I found a letter from the council, who may even be listening to my talk, because they seem very interested in all the nitty-gritty of our daily life. So this letter came from the council with many questions about what we're doing here, our lifestyle, to try and find out if we need to change our planning permission, which we may need to do. And I could see the prospect of this completely ruining my retreat. You know, if I allowed my mind to go along its usual habitual pattern of worry and maybe a sense of over-responsibility, I could see this completely destroying the retreat. So for about 2 days, I panicked and thought, oh, I felt quite sorry for myself. You know, why has this come up just as I was about to go into silence? But luckily we asked them if they would just delay, you know, our need to respond until the end of the retreat. And thankfully they said yes, but still I had to work with that, you know, and this in a way helped me to be very, very present during my retreat, because if I wasn't, you know, trying to, just enjoy the present moment and put aside any thoughts of worry or fear for the future, then immediately my mind would revert to that. It's almost as though a retreat has a theme in terms of the Dhamma, but it also has a theme in terms of Mara.
I don't know if anyone else has noticed this, like Mara, or, you know, this kind of force inside the mind. Some people consider it like a being, or you can personify it as a kind of little demon who tries to keep you stuck, tries to prevent you getting deep into your meditation. It's almost as if they try and find a hook. You know, it might be the council that threatens our feeling of safety and security, right, in this world. It might even be something really silly that happened to me later on in the retreat, like going through every sutta that I've learned and trying to find Pali names for my future nuns. I mean, that seems very wholesome, right? Let's try and find a Pali name for a nun who isn't even here and doesn't even need a name. And it can seem very wholesome, right? It can seem like a very wholesome and worthwhile distraction, but it's actually taking you away from the moment, taking you away from stillness. So I had my little Mara there, and luckily, Ajahn Brahm knew about it, and he said, oh, this is a very good sign. Maybe Mara knows that you're going to get into the jhanas or into enlightenment in this retreat, and he must be very worried about it. So this is a very good sign. And that was quite reassuring. So bearing that advice in mind, I continued and just really tried to establish the sense of gratitude for the conditions and give myself complete permission to relax. So this was part of the run-up to taking even more solitude in the middle of the retreat. And one of the beautiful things, you know, about a longer retreat is that we do have that time. We really do have that time to allow the mind to process what needs to be processed and to allow ourselves to gradually drop into the silence, to gradually allow things to disappear. And, you know, to just notice the tendencies and habits of the mind and find ways of working with those, not condemning them, judging them, you know, not wishing them away, but just finding skillful means to work with our bodies, to work with our minds in ways that can sometimes be quite inventive. And, you know, I went to Ajahn Brahm most weeks for an interview. And by now, you know, I kind of know the teachings, and I also know the kind of advice he gives, which is basically just find out for yourself, let go, do very little. And this year he just said to me, experiment, you know, experiment with what works. Don't have a kind of standard idea about any particular technique or any particular way that you expect the retreat to unfold, but just be open to experimentation. And this is a very skillful way to practice, you know, to improvise, to be innovative, and to work with the mind in the current state it's in. So in a way, this is the maturity of a meditator, that we have the confidence and also patience to try different things, you know, to try different remedies for the five hindrances. Don't always do the same old thing. You know, don't even think, okay, well, now I've got the trick. Whenever I feel like irritable or anxious, I'll practice metta meditation. Just because it worked last time doesn't mean it will this. So it's great to have a few different ways of, you know, approaching our minds and getting familiar with its patterns. One of my main approaches this time, if you can call it that, is just letting things be. Just being more in the present moment, really in the present moment. I don't know if any of you here really understand what that means, present moment. Have you practiced this as a meditation method? Yeah, some nods there. So for me, one of the ways that I practiced it this time was not to even take an object, but to make the present moment, the presence of the moment, the object. So it kind of sounds a bit Zen, doesn't it? But the way that I would practice is that whenever I saw my mind wanting to even go to the breath, you know, okay, the breath is there. Now it's time to go on to the breath, or now it's time to, you know, notice the body sensations or do a body scan. I would just say, no, just presence, just the present moment. What is that? What is the perception of that space between the past and the future? And just allowing the mind to stay there.
And it's a very interesting practice because it really gives the mind some poise and some kind of sharpness, some kind of precision with the practice. And I found that the longer I stayed there, the more receptive it became to things like the breath. So it's almost as though we sort of say no to the breath at the early stages until the breath comes really knocking on the door. And by the time the breath arises, it can be really quite subtle and peaceful and already imbued with delight. So really taking our time is something that the prospect of a long retreat offers. And in the meantime, you know, we get to work with any hindrances in the mind. Hindrances means, you know, craving, aversion, restlessness, fear, maybe anxiety, dullness, which for me lasted a long time actually in this retreat. And it was probably only after 3 or 4 weeks that I actually managed to, or the mind finally kind of woke up in a way that allowed that that haze to sort of disperse. So I didn't worry about it. I just gave my body and mind as much rest as they needed. And finally, I kind of got a bit fed up with it in the end. And it was like, let me just kind of be a little bit more clear, not just give into it, and just see if a little bit more energy can come into the mind. And because I wasn't fighting it, but I was just inviting the energy in, as soon as I made that intention, it was as if the sort of haziness lifted and the mind became bright. Yeah. So during the retreat, there was a lot of benefit. Some of the really cute benefits, actually, are things like that sense of connection with the natural world. You know, and this retreat was in a beautiful forest. But I've done long retreats, even in the center of Oxford, in a small house. And just that sense of connection, even with a single leaf, you know, or the sound of the frogs. There are a lot of frogs around Jhana Grove. Beautiful birds, the changing light during the day. Just the simplicity of it all. And getting into a rhythm, you know, getting in touch with the rhythms of nature, but also finding the natural rhythm, the energetic rhythm in the body and in the mind. And especially as women, for those of us here who are women or who identify as women and have the monthly cycles that we have to enjoy. I was going to say endure, but you know, sometimes it can be enjoyable too when we start to recognize those cycles. We do go through ups and downs in terms of mood, you know, and it's so interesting when you have a longer period of time to get in touch with those moods to realize that they are just part of nature as well. You know, we can almost predict that if it's coming up to a certain time of month. And I don't know if this happens for men. Maybe it does. Maybe it's across longer time frames. I'm not sure. But sometimes we think, oh, gosh, you know, why am I so depressed right now? Why am I suddenly feeling teary? And then we remember, oh, it's the time of the month. So over time, we can start to realize that even before it happens and not buy into it, not take it so seriously and start, you know, adding a storyline to it all. So I noticed that this was happening for me. I mean, I'm actually nearly at menopause now, but still I have a few of those kind of pre-menstrual moods. And it's really interesting to kind of preempt it in a way and then to see where we're bringing in a story that actually is irrelevant and just consolidates suffering in our minds, you know. So just allowing things to run their natural course is really beautiful. And create and takes off so much of the suffering that we had. So one of the things as well for me in this retreat was this ability to, or the realization that I can be content quite easily with a simple lifestyle in a simple room, meditating mostly with the blinds down, and just having a very simple experience, you know, not looking for results. And sometimes the breath became so sweet, so beautiful, so full of contentment. I really felt like this is enough for the entire retreat. And sometimes I was so much in the present moment with that feeling that You know, even that single moment was enough for the entire retreat. And this gave a great sense of confidence, you know, that whatever happens, you know, with the monastery, with the Anagarikas, with my own health, whatever happens, wherever I find myself, I can be content. You know, we have, all of us, we have that ability, we have that capacity inside ourselves for contentment. And it's so reassuring, it's so productive of confidence in the path, confidence in our practice, to realize that contentment is right inside. It's not in the future. It's not somewhere else. You know, it's not in even the jhanas. It's not even in enlightenment. It can be had now. You know, so much of the time we put it off. We say, oh, I'll be happy when. I'd be happy if. You know, I don't want to feel such and such. I don't want to do this or that in my life in case I have a certain feeling, in case I feel guilt, in case I feel stress. But when we can learn to be content even with the guilt, we can be content even with the tiredness, even with the anxiety, even with the feeling that we're not good enough. We can just be content with that. We don't have to change. We don't have to become better before we can be happy. Ah, what a relief. You know, it really is possible to find peace right now. And it seems almost kind of a paradox or a contradiction to say that we can be happy now. It's almost like, well, why do we need a long retreat? You know, the idea of a long retreat kind of loses its meaning. But sometimes we just need time to come to that. You know, it's quite common during this so-called long retreat to still measure it in terms of a start, a beginning, and an end. And if it's a 3-month retreat, you might think that the whole month, the last month, is the end. So you have to keep bringing it back. It's like, okay, why can't the last month be the beginning of a month-long retreat? The last week, most people start to break into speech, you know, or even start packing to go home in the last week. But for many of you here, I'm sure a week's retreat is a long retreat. So bring it back again and again. Okay, I have a week. You know, it's the last day. Wow, a whole day's retreat. Some of you come to Anukampa Grove for a half day retreat and you get benefit. So, you know, bringing it back to whatever time we have available. And again, in a way, the length of that retreat just gives you more space to really get familiar with your mind, to really allow yourself patience, to allow yourself time, to put down aims and goals and aspirations and just become more and more contented in the here and now. So this is one of the wonderful things we learn in long retreats, that we can find peace in any moment. You know, we have to find peace in any moment because the moment's all we've got. Yeah. We don't know what's going to happen the next day. I mean, right now, most of us, presumably, who are here are living in safety. But I'm very aware that there's still a terrible genocide taking place in Gaza. There's still, you know, a famine, I think, in Sudan. Am I right? There's a lot of, fear, a lot of fear, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of displacement, yeah, in many countries across the world, in Myanmar, in all kinds of countries. I mean, you can't pick out one place and say the suffering's worse in that place. And it can happen to anyone at any time. So we are fortunate. And I think, again, you know, some of the results of the retreat are seen in the long term. Hopefully, if we've really practiced properly and we've tried to turn towards suffering with gentleness, with patience, with kindness, then we're not going to turn away from the suffering in the world. You know, we can speak out when it's time to speak out. We can, if we can't be activists ourselves on the front lines, we can encourage others to do that. I got a really beautiful message, actually, from someone many of you might know in the community, but I better not say their name. But they're doing incredible things. They're training people to in basically non-violent activism, in de-escalation, you know, in people who go into the streets and hold up signs that say stop the genocide, or they hold up signs that say, you know, we have a right to freedom of speech, right? There's a kind of movement going on in England now, unfortunately, to quash our right to protest. And this person said that they've got the strength not only to do this for themselves, but they're actually training not hundreds, but thousands of other people in nonviolent action. And this person told me that it's basically they wouldn't be in that position. They wouldn't be who they are without the Dhamma they'd learned here at Anukampa. And it was largely through, you know, practicing metta meditation, learning the teachings, coming to the retreats we offer that's enabled them to do this. So we all can serve in our own ways. You know, we can't all be at the forefront of political change or climate activism or whatever else we really believe in. You know, maybe our day jobs, right? Our day jobs are things that hopefully you can be passionate about. It might not be your main passion, but you can find meaning in that. You know, whether it's a business that you're running, whether you're a nurse, whether you're, I don't know, a teacher, whether you're helping with the YouTube videos, whatever it might be, try to connect it to the greater context of what is needed in this world. Yeah, because none of us can do everything, but we can all do something. And it's having people in different roles that makes the society strong. So try to align what you do with the Eightfold Noble Path. Make it come in alignment with right livelihood. As long as you're not killing, dealing in drugs and poisons and things that harm, then your livelihood is probably pretty pure. And if you're retired, you know, you can still do something. You can learn the Dhamma, you can do some voluntary work. Whatever stage of life you're in, you're contributing something to this world. Many of you are parents. You know, you've brought up really responsible, beautiful kids. They might not be doing what you wanted them to be, but I'm sure they're, you know, living with integrity, living the best lives they can. So in all these ways, we're serving in the world. And for me, in a way, the results are not only in feeling more resourced. I do feel more resourced. I do feel more relaxed. I feel inspired. I feel confident that this path is worth pursuing and it's possible to pursue. I feel more patient. I know it has to take the time it takes. It's not up to me, you know, to kind of anticipate results. But the results are coming, and the results are right now in definitely feeling very grateful, very, very grateful and blessed for my life. But in the long term, we will see. You know, in the long term, I think a change of priorities is one of the things we find. We start to change. We might start to change our friendships in a way, or let's say we spend more time with spiritual friends. For me, I'm definitely going to prioritize, you know, getting up in the morning for my morning meditation, which sometimes dropped away because I'd be up so late at night. But it makes such a big difference to, you know, meditate first thing. Even if you lose an hour of sleep and you're a little bit more cloudy by the middle of the day, if you can, you can take a rest in the middle of the day. But at least you start the day fresh, you know, exercising. I was exercising every morning. That gave me a real physical boost and mental boost as well. Yeah, I'm starting to see some messages, so I'm coming to the questions very soon. But just to kind of give you some ideas for making your life more wholesome and starting the day with some gratitude, with a kind of sense of perspective, you know, that meditation can bring. So I think for me, definitely, I got to understand more about my tendencies and conditioning, to be kind to that, to be patient with that, to prioritize, to find a more balanced way of life. And right now I feel really inspired to share whatever I've received, to share whatever benefits I have experienced and will continue to experience with all beings, for the sake of all beings to grow in the Dhamma and to live really meaningful lives. So I should probably stop talking and allow you to ask me some questions. And there's already a question in the box. So may all beings benefit from our shared retreat time. May it go for the good of many. And may you all be inspired to carve out that little bit more time in your daily lives, as well as perhaps some retreat time, whenever you can. There will be retreats offered through us as well this year. So we'll be a retreat in Norway, and hopefully we're hoping to do another retreat either in Finland or Sweden. There'll also be a retreat with Ajahn Brahmali in England in June. Ajahn Brahm's coming in November, and I am hoping to do more retreats in England as well. So I really haven't done so many yet because I usually have to organise them myself. But I do feel that if we can get a team together to organise some retreats over here, it'd be great. And I'd like to teach some, not intensive, but focus on metta practice, which is really so much in need in this world. So, okay, I hope you enjoyed the talk. And I would now love to invite questions. If you'd like to ask a question anonymously, please put it in the box. If you would like to ask your question through speech, you will still remain off the video screen. Only your voice will be recorded. So it's lovely for people to hear real human beings, you know, different voices and me as well. But you have an option there. So the question here, could you please share the name or a contact of the nonviolent activist organization you've talked about? Okay, so I'm going to have to contact the person because I'm not sure it has a name. I could quickly check my messages. Is that allowed during the talk? Just to see if it's there, but I don't think it will be. It might talk about the kind of activism this person's doing. I'll just check how they describe it. So they've done a defend. They do a lot of defend our juries protests. It's about nonviolence. They're calling out the genocide and the government's complicity. So it's a direct action group, but I don't know the name of it. I'm sure if you Google this, you'll find lots of these groups. Let's just see. Yeah, nonviolence. There is, of course, Extinction Rebellion. I think that's one of the most popular nonviolent activist groups. So they sometimes just call that XR. So none of these are recommendations, by the way, because I don't know and I'm not involved. So I wouldn't like to kind of recommend or take a kind of stance on these things. But if you're interested, please research it and find out more. Yeah. So please ask me any questions you wish about retreats or anything else. You're welcome to share what's going on for you. And please keep your questions brief, perhaps one each, because there's a lot of people here today.
Okay. Warmest wishes, Venerable. I just wanted to rejoice in your retreat. I have one question. It's one question. There's some context I need to share before I ask the question. So one of the biggest wins that I learned while you were on retreat is the science of kindness. So I learned that the receiver of an act of kindness gets a noticeable increase in serotonin, which boosts their immune system and acts as a dose of an antidepressant. And this increase in serotonin was observed not only in the receiver of the act of kindness, but also in the giver and the witness. Yeah. So witnessing an act of kindness. And the morning sutta, the Buddha gives a blessing. May you be happy and healthy together with all your relatives. And so that's a blessing that has scientific results because that's an act of kindness that adds to health and happiness.
Yeah.
So my question is, I've heard one meditation teacher, when asked about devas, if they can see us, she said kind of bluntly, they can, but especially like the Brahmas, they don't care because they're blissed out in jhana. And then I think the way I heard it was that word, they don't care, can be a little triggering. But if we know the science of kindness, my question is, how is jhana an act of kindness? So when we reflect on our spiritual friends, are on retreat, and they're in jhana, And how is that an act of kindness? Because if we have the wisdom to recognize how that's an act of kindness, we can rejoice and share in the health and happiness of that kindness. So that's my question for the Sangha. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm not sure I fully understand the question, but what I can say is that when I talk to certain people about their meditation, I feel so much joy. So certainly knowing that somebody is practicing really, really well is a massive act of kindness. And I saw the impact of this in the whole retreat. You know, Ajahn Brahm was on his retreat for a month. And we all know that Ajahn Brahm has incredibly deep practice and, you know, doesn't mess around. So if he's got a month's retreat, he's just going to plunge straight in. And he knows how to approach it because he has the wisdom of non-self. And so, you know that when he's practicing really well. Not only do you know it intellectually, but you feel the energy. And many people on the retreat got inspired. I mean, I always feel that it's the happiest time of year for me to know my teacher's in retreat because he gives so much and now it's his time to enjoy. And I know how much bliss and how much wisdom he gets from that. So I took also a month retreat at the same time. And that inspired other people at Jhana Grove because there's Bodhinyana Monastery, which is 15 minutes walk through the forest from the Jhana Grove Retreat Center. So he was here, I was over here. And a lot of other people in the retreat center also did a month's retreat. And I just had this sense that the whole place went quieter than usual. And it was incredibly, what's the word? I hope it gave Ajahn a lot of confidence that we're going to be okay when he's not around. Because sometimes when you've got a very powerful teacher, it's easy to kind of keep going to them to get an energy boost. And you can almost become a little bit dependent on that. But actually, by virtue of his practice, we got an energy boost even more. And, you know, I usually talk to him every week, but I didn't speak to him for a month and I didn't need to. Because I could connect through the Dhamma and I could actually tune in. I'm pretty sure it wasn't just me who could tune in to his practice and pick up the metta as well. So it was very beautiful. And I think, you know, when I hear about other people's practice or when I know they're practicing deep meditation, I feel a lot of joy. And it does have the effect of bringing other people more deep than they normally go. So it was a really special time. So thank you for saying that. It's one of the most beautiful things when I meet my teacher after retreat and I just see the joy. And he feels it too, of course, when he meets us. Yeah. So we share the happiness and that encourages us to keep going. So Caro, coming to you.
Yes. Sorry, my voice is a little bit broken. I hope you can hear me.
Perfectly. And thank you for looking after Anukampa Grove for about a month, wasn't it? 3 weeks?
Yeah, it was amazing. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm very happy to see you back safe in Anukampa Grove. And I have a question regarding... Yeah, the exploration I do now, like after 9 years of Vipassana meditation and also like retreat, intense retreats with a lot of stillness. This year I'm working a lot of with emotions I'm exploring a new thing, which is kind of opposite of silent retreat, but like a group dynamic workshop with dynamic meditation. Even screaming and hitting cushions to the ground.
Yeah.
Like a lot of body work. And I'm doubting actually because my Buddhist background says all the time, like, no, you shouldn't express out loud negative emotions and you should do wholesome things. And now I'm very happy to ask you, have the opportunity to ask you because it's
okay.
Big doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think when we talk about not expressing negative emotions, I mean, one thing is this judgment negative, right? What is negative? Usually what we mean by that is kind of harmful or hurtful. You know, things that if we express them, we may cause ourselves and others harm. So normally I think that sort of encouragement not to express, you know, involves a bit of restraint, especially when in our daily lives. So it's in a relational sense. But if you're all in a group together and you're just kind of releasing energy and releasing kind of maybe pent up frustration or I don't know what, in a safe space with other people, it's not quite the same. So I don't think you can say it's wrong or it's right, it's good or it's bad. Generally, I think it really depends on you, where you're at in your process right now. And it may be that, you know, you've done it enough that it's been helpful and now the doubt is coming because it's no longer helpful. That may be the case. You know, you don't need to do it now. Or it may be that you are seeing the kind of negative or a detrimental side to this. So I guess you have to know that for yourself. You have to know how that manifests in your day-to-day life and whether you're, you know, anger, frustration, maybe jealousy, other afflictive emotions, let's say, are decreasing over time or actually being encouraged. But you have to take that over some time. So I hope that helps just as a general kind of yardstick. But I mean, that's not going to get you liberated. Okay. So a method like that is not going to take you all the way. It might be helpful for short periods of time along the path, perhaps, depending on your conditioning and what you've been holding on to, the way you've been practicing, maybe. Yeah. One other thing I would like to say about long retreats is that, yes, when we've been conditioned through the Goenka practice particularly or other intensive type retreats, which are based on a particular method, we can use the word intensive automatically when we think of long retreat. My long retreat was not intensive. I don't really know what intensive means. It gave me the space to find a very beautiful, gentle, kind rhythm for my body and mind. I didn't pressure myself. I allowed the meditation to build gradually and naturally. You know, I have to actually stop myself sitting too long because of my health. So that almost forces me to be kind, to be gentle and not to push my body at all. So, I think it depends on the kind of structure of the retreat because this was a very open one and you can do as much walking, as much sitting, as much sleeping, as much anything, walks in the forest as you wish. And so with a retreat method like that, or a retreat container like that, I think there'd be no need actually to do the kind of more dynamic process. But at certain times it might be helpful. So yeah, I can't land either way, but I hope that's helpful just for you to explore. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, super. I'm going to come to Jonah and then back to the question box.
Hi. Thank you, Ranjana. Hi. Nice to be here and thank you for sharing something so precious.
You're very welcome.
I've done like a lot of retreats, but I'm considering doing like, I'm really feeling a yearning to do a much like kind of longer period of practice. Yeah. And I feel like over time I do seem to hone, like I have less of a crash coming back because I think more consciously about like things to put into place.
Mm.
I just wondered if there was anything that you would advise, like considering like a much longer retreat.
Yeah, thanks for that. It's so important to integrate our practice, you know, a gentle kind of entry into the retreat and a gentle emergence as well. It's almost like you're entering deep water and you want to go in gradually, maybe even come out a little bit, go in again, you know, make sure there's someone to hold your hand even, you know. I think it's really important to have somebody there, like a teacher or teachers, some kind of structure so that you can at least check in from time to time. And then on emergence as well, it's so important to gradually become more extroverted again. So
For me, in a 3-month retreat these days, especially because it involves traveling to the other side of the world, I have at least 2 weeks of each at either end. And it's not that I'm not on retreat because I'm not in perfect silence. It's just that there's still a little bit of room to maybe meet an old friend or to, you know, have an extra interview or to finish off a couple of emails or even, yeah, just say hello to somebody who I haven't yet met. And then in the end, I'm careful about who I speak to. So one of the things I did was, well, I always like to speak to my teacher first, but I also wanted to speak to my Anagarikas. And in one case, one of them was actually doing her retreat until the end of my retreat, I think, even a bit longer. So I actually wanted to be the first person she spoke to as well, which didn't quite work, but it almost worked, because it's important to have like a wholesome input. And to be, so that it's not too jarring. So I think that's really important, to gradually emerge and be really gentle, give yourself time. I think at the Vipassana centers, you know, they did 30-day retreats and now they do up to 60-day retreats, and it's 12 hours sitting a day, total silence. You don't even look up. And in the beginning, they used to have like one metta day, which was a kind of extroversion day for the 30-day, but now I think they have two, and I think on the longer ones they have three. And it was never enough for me. I would always stay on longer and usually serve a retreat after that, because I would go quite deep and I'd be quite sensitive. So really respect your own particular body and mind. Some people are a lot more sensitive, and sometimes we think we've not gone deep, but we have, compared to our daily life. You know, it might be that your mind never stopped chattering for the whole retreat. So you think, oh, you know, I'm not very deep. I didn't get much silence. I can just start talking to people. But the fact is, you've still been observing it. You've still not been engaging. You've been very much in your own space. You've been feeling very safe, very protected, and you will be more sensitive than you realize. So yeah, definitely come out slowly and plan for that. Yeah. Is that the extent of your question around that, or was a okay? It was okay. Just put your hand up again if you have anything else. So there's a now comment in the chat about an Extinction Rebellion Buddhist group. Thank you very much for that. So you can look for that online. Okay. Another question. What would you say are the most important things to prepare before a longer retreat? I'm going to a 20-day retreat in a couple of weeks. Excellent. Important things to prepare. If it's a 20-day retreat within the Goenka tradition, which I'm not sure it is, you will have already prepared really well by doing 2 hours meditation a day. So that's great. If you haven't been having a regular practice, then I would say, start meditating a little bit as much as you can, just to start to wind down. It's good to talk to the people around you about the retreat and make sure you have people's blessing as far as you can. Obviously, you know, tell your workplace. Otherwise, I mean, I think you're probably prepared, you know, you're already coming to Dhamma sessions like this. You've probably been practicing a while. So I don't know if there's much more that I would say. I mean, don't over prepare, you know, don't kind of think, right, when I get to the retreat, I'm going to do this on day one. Then by week, you know, the first week, I should have practiced enough metta, but then by the second week, I can practice Anapana. Try not to do that. Try to actually go in with a really open mind. I mean, if it is a kind of technique-based retreat, there's a limit to that, but still make sure that you go in with a lot of respect and gentleness for your body and mind, and try not to have expectations, you know, about the what you want to experience or how far you want to proceed, because this is it kind of has no place on the spiritual path. You know, the spiritual path is about meeting ourselves where we are right now and making what Ajahn Brahm calls good meditation karma with the moment, which basically means relating to the moment with right attitude, with kindness, loving kindness rather than aversion, with gentleness rather than cruelty, and with a sense of letting things be rather than demanding and expecting and controlling your experience. So see if you can maybe even practice some metta meditation to get kind of aligned with these intentions before your retreat. That might be a good preparation as well. Yeah. Okay. Will there be Vassa retreats at Anucampa Grove in time to come? Yes, I'm sure that in time to come that will happen, but we don't really know what the future holds. I would love to do a Vassa retreat here. Maybe I'm spoilt, but as long as Ajahn Brahm's alive, I'd also love to be practicing with him. But there may be times, like there were during the corona pandemic, that I won't be going. There may be times I'm too sick. There may be times I have to stay because my, you know, Anagarikas or seminaries need me here. So I'm sure it will happen. And it would be a really beautiful place to do a long retreat because it would be the summertime rather than the middle of winter. So the temperature never really increased very much in Perth before I left. It was about an average of about 14 degrees, sometimes like 7 or 3 or something, even now. So it's a very cold Vassa compared to usual. And now I came back to a cold autumn as well. No difference really in the temperature. So it'd be lovely to do one here. Okay, thanks for your comments. Thank you for your dedications. Oh, Jilma couldn't unmute. Okay, no worries. If anyone has one final comment, please let me know. Otherwise, I'll hand over to Minori to close the evening. Anything else anyone would like to ask or share? Going, but not gone forever. Should I unmute Minori?
Yeah, so thank you very much for everyone, and it's so lovely to see Venerable Chanda again at the end of summer. And I like to say a few words about dana, generosity. Giving develops wholesome qualities that form the foundation of our Dhamma practice. So the generosity can also be a practice of checking in deeply with us. The Buddha said that the wisest way to give is when one gives with a heart full of joy, for the purposes of beautifying the mind, for equipping the mind for the practice of serenity and insight, from Anguttara 8.33. So here at Anukampa, we offer several ways that we can cultivate this beautiful quality of giving. You can do a finance donation if you are capable of. There will be a link in the chat box. If you are able, you can do a standing order. That means a regular donation. If you are capable, you can do volunteering during an organizing event. You can drop an email to team@anukampaproject.org if you have any special skills and time. And now that Venerable and Anagarikas are there, the Dana calendar is open. You can have a look at that in the website and speak to the team at anukampaproject.org as well. You can do the Dana in person or remotely as well.
Food.
Dana is the food, yes, providing meals to the monastics. You can do it either via a cooked meal delivery in person. And then there is needed items list in the website, so you can have a look and see whether you can do that, and supermarket deliveries. Yes, so thank you again for being part of this community and holding on to the community until Venerable comes back. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for keeping our community alive and rich, and being here for me to return to. It's really amazing. And just to add to what Minori was saying, we had another idea during the rains. It actually came from Ajahn Hasapanya, my abbot at Dhammasara, former abbot there. I mean, she is the abbot, but I used to be training there.
under her. So she had the great idea that as part of making food offerings easier, there could also be an option for you to offer a kind of meal from a supermarket that can be just put in the oven. Because the thing is, as bhikkhunis, we don't get regular offerings of food the way that the monks' monasteries do. For the monks, they've been seen as kind of a field of merit for lay people for centuries, for thousands of years, but bhikkhunis are still not really seen that way. So we don't get a lot of the Buddhist community coming here to offer food in person. Maybe if we're lucky, twice a week, but I don't think there's much booked in at all. So a way to make it easier, because we are an international community, is to actually just order, get something from a supermarket, like a pie or, I don't know, something that can be put in the oven, and then we can put it in the freezer and use it when we don't have people in person. So that could be really great. And yeah, I'll give some more information to our team who will help you about the kind of things that might be okay for our diets, for our stomachs. Yeah. I mean, I have a bit of a strange stomach. I think other people also might have a few dietary requirements, but it should be made easy for you. So thank you very much. And also, today was the last kind of talk in this kind of format for a while, but we will be starting the Sutta discussions on a Friday evening. When is the first? Is that coming Friday, probably? And also metta meditation every couple of Saturdays. I've stayed up and not managed to completely scramble my sentences. Last two nights I went to bed at 8 o'clock and woke up at about 4 a.m, which is a bit early.
But there is a last question, yes, about the vegetable box. I think we are getting vegetable boxes.
Yeah, a vegetable box. That would be excellent. I'm not sure if we have vegetable boxes booked in again. Again, if you would like to write to team@anukampaproject.org, they, I'm sure, can give you the opportunity to send a vegetable box. I think there might be a couple of donors who do that every month, so it might be, I don't know actually is the answer, but it'd be very much appreciated to have some vegetables. Great. Thank you. There are at least 3 different veggie boxes in Oxford area. Yes. How is the biscuit brew supply? Thank you. Has anyone tried biscuit brew? It's a really interesting cup of tea. I thought it sounded disgusting, and some people said, is it allowable? They actually thought it was made of biscuits, but it's just a tea bag, Yorkshire tea bag with biscuit flavour. I'm not meant to advertise, we'll have to cut this out. Anyway, it's really horrible. Yeah, sure. It's actually much nicer than it sounds. Yeah. Yeah. We have to cut that out now, won't we? They say that if I say something, it's advertising.
You can answer the question.
How's the supply? Yeah, we got loads of it. Thank you. We've actually got at least 3 more boxes for now, but thank you.
So next month.
Next month? Yeah. We won't eat that much. Next month, or in a couple of months. That'd be great. Thank you. All right, I better let you go, because I'm sure many of you also want to get to bed, perhaps, or do some meditation. I don't know. So take care, everyone, and looking forward to seeing some of you at our November events, and maybe online before then. Take care. All the best. Oh, unmute yourselves if you want. It's nice to hear you. Bye.